My name is Ernst Ludwig Winnacke. I have a PhD in organic chemistry from the Swiss Institute of Technology. And after many postdoctoral years in the US and in Sweden, I eventually ended up at the University of Munich and became there a full professor of biochemistry. And in this connection, I also got to know Bert Vallée.
When did you first meet him?
With a colleague of mine, we worked on peptides from plants which contain zinc and phytogelatins, they are called. And that raised the interest, apparently, of Bert Vallée, who has always been interested in metalloproteins, metalloenzymes, and so on. And our papers in the 80s on phytogelatins must have interested him, and he suddenly showed up in Munich. From then on, we knew him. Eventually, became even an honorary degree, an honorary doctor at our Faculty of Chemistry and Pharmacy at the University of Munich.
What was your first impression of Bert Vallée?
Oh, it was a very positive. He was a very lively personality, outspoken, critical. Very much interested in science, and which I liked very much, and that intrigued me, and intrigued many of us quite a bit. And but he was also, and he was also, he liked to live very much. So I remember going with him several times to eat white asparagus in Alsace, Strasbourg, and around the area where we now live, by incidentally, still eating white asparagus when it is served, when it is grown in April and May. And he loved wines, he loved to eat, and he loved to have friends. So he, in fact, I think the main program of this foundation, that is to invite outstanding scientists to spend a month somewhere in the world at an interesting place, that came out of his idea to first make his friends come to Boston. And that's what happened.
You say he was outspoken. How was he outspoken?
Well, he was very opinionated. He had a feeling for the character of people. Are they honest? Are they dishonest? And he would say it. And he had he knew whether we could trust someone or could not trust someone in a scientific way, but also in a personal way. He hated intrigue. I guess his institute was quite alone. I think he was not member of some kind of department, or the department in which he was in, he was the only professor. And that was very typical for him, I think. Yeah, he was really strongly focused on science, and he couldn't care less about administration and duties which the deans imposed upon him that he didn't like. And so he remained, as far as I know, always quite independent. And that, of course, is something you can only live at the university. He did very good science, so nobody could complain. He got money for his work. He brought money to the university. So he did his duty in that respect. He fulfilled his duties very well.
But he was a bit of a maverick.
Yes, he was a bit of a maverick. He did do things differently from other people. And he did do his... did do things his way, and he may have antagonized people by this, because in a faculty you somehow have to make compromises and live together. But that was really too difficult for him.
What was easy for him? What gave him the most satisfaction, do you think?
Oh, easy for him. He loved to do research. He was an outstanding scientist. He was full of new ideas and instrumentation. He was the first one in the 1950s already to introduce spectroscopic methods in measuring metals. I mean, today is all trivial, but at that time, really the frontier of research. And he remained on this. He later on worked on angiogenesis, that is, on the mechanism of how blood vessels are formed, which is a crucial mechanism in oncogenesis, in tumor formation, because tumors have to live, and have to and they have to supply themselves with blood, otherwise they cannot live. All this, and that of course required over the 40 or so years he was in the system, required always and constantly adaptation to new methods and to ways of thinking. That's what he loved. And he loved to talk to people about what he did and what they did. He probably could not listen to what people thought whom he doesn't like, whom he didn't like and he didn't see as competent. But those who saw, whom he respected, he could really talk to and listen to.
You must have known him then as he was beginning to formalize the foundation.
Yes, I knew him before that. Mm-hmm. And I think I knew him, I knew him long before that. I have met, he was often in Munich on his way to Asparagus in Alsace. And he came often by, and it was also interesting that he was involved after World War II from early on as an American officer, as a U.S. officer, in reorganizing the Munich University after World War II, which was very difficult because it was fully destroyed and no people and so on. Yet there were lots of young Germans who wanted to study, and so he was very early on involved in that. He didn't talk much about this, but it was clear that at that time he was involved in activities of this type. But of course that was long before I knew him, and at that time I was much too young, in 1946. I mean, formally, I think the foundation, when I should look it up, was founded in 96, I think. But before that, he already invited people he liked very much, who are, some of them are now officers in the Board of Trustees. He invited them for trips to Montana, or he started, I think, a first conference with his friends, so to speak, but he was very critical in that time in Annecy, not far from the Lake of Geneva. So he had this contact, lots of contacts in Europe, in Sweden, in Germany, in France, and Switzerland, and with the foundation he formalized this. So these invitations, which happened all the time, as I said, he loved to be surrounded by people who whom he could communicate with.
Do you think he saw the foundation as the exchange of ideas? Was it about collaboration, or was it about just learning from one another, or did he expect people then to go on and work together?
When it was informal, he just wanted people to come to see him and be in Boston and be surrounded by them. I think so. And then, but that evolved with time. Then he introduced us to his collaborators, and he had many. I think in some cases, not in my case, it came to collaborations. But he invited people to give talks at his institute, at his department, and it was kind of a mix of things. And of course, it had to be formalized at some time or another, and that's what happened. And then, of course, it was people were invited to conferences like it is now. But the last one was at MIT. He was there and attended the discussion, listened to everything, asked questions. And the people actually invited were from different fields. There were cell biologists, biochemists, neurobiologists, everything, DNA people, everything which was kind of... It was more the people in which he was interested in, and whether they were trustworthy, whether they were good scientists. Not so much the field. Of course, none of us was a philosopher by profession or an archaeologist, but we were all somewhere around the life sciences. But around this broad definition, there were many fields represented always.
So the breadth of interest that he had was important in influencing the nature of the conferences.
He had a real imposing breadth of knowledge, and he was baroque. He was extremely baroque. He was not modest, to say that. He liked the best which he could get hold of in people, but also he liked to live. So when I say Baroque, I mean he was not just focused on the scientific subject. He could leave in the afternoon and go to the best restaurants in Boston, or things like this. That he enjoyed outdoors, I think, quite a bit, and that he could combine somehow with this kind of lifestyle. He could combine with the science and never forgot the science. So in that, there are too many scientists probably around who just are very narrow-minded and just look for the science and for the 355th transcription factor, etc. But he always had a much broader interest, and he was looking at the goals of something, at where would it lead to? Is it worthwhile? Was the work frontier-like? Would it lead anywhere? Not so. He wasn't doing the work just for the work, for the sake of the work, to keep himself busy, but he had something in mind, and of course that's what good scientists have to have.
Have you got any particular stories or memories that would perhaps illustrate the character of the man?
Yes, I remember, well, as I said before, for example, he loved white asparagus, so he knew where to get this. This is here in this country, this is very unusual. Nobody knew at the time that this would exist, and he was well organized. He came and knew all the best hotels, the best restaurants of how to approach this, the best ham with which you have to serve it, and the best white wine. Not necessarily expensive, but just good. And actually, he was very insistent. When he wanted something, he got it. We traveled in Alsace, which is French-speaking, basically, but he kind of stopped the car and talked to people in a vineyard in their accent, because that accent was very close to what he grew up with, and a mixture of French and German, and talked to them, and talked to them as if he was somebody who would grow wine himself, and got the people to talk and tell him. It could be quite funny to stand there and listen to his peculiar accent and talking to a French or an Alsatian. Just moments when we didn't find the proper place and he insisted on finding it. And I have heard about it 30 years ago, it must exist. Then he talked to all these old ladies there, these villagers who didn't understand him, but in the end he got his way and found things, and so we had a good time with him. One year he invited us, my wife and me, to go to Montana and spend a few days there and ride and enjoy the atmosphere out there, the Wild West, so to speak. I am frightened of horses, but he made me sit on a horse, and
so he made you do some things that you didn't necessarily
so
want to
he,
do.
And if the horses would suddenly go very fast and I was frightened and didn't know what to do, you could hear his voice in the back, "Just hold on." Just hold on. Yeah, so I just held on, and in the end, I am not from here, so we learned that's behind the Yellowstone Park, the other side of Yellowstone Park, where we had never been before. You know, you arrive on the airport in Montana, you say, "This is cholesterol country." And then you ask yourself, "What is cholesterol country?" And then the next morning he takes you to breakfast, and the smallest number of fried eggs they eat is 5. So you know the cholesterol country. These are the kind of experiences you make when you lived with birds.
To talk about the foundation, obviously when he was alive, it very much took on the character of Burt Valley. After his death, how would you describe the foundation? Do you think that he would, if he walked in the door now, would he be happy with the way the foundation is now? Would he be proud of his legacy?
I hope so. I mean, it's hard to know, but I think the main program is these Valley Visiting Professorships, which are ongoing, and where we try to identify people which we think he would have loved to meet. Of course, these are now much younger people, and we are But there are always people of who we think he would have appreciated and who were good scientists at one time. And in a very strict sense, good scientists that were not cheating, honest, transparent, selecting interesting projects, interesting fields. That's what he was after, and that's what we try as well.
You've been a part of the scientific community for a long time. There are obviously many scientific committees and associations and forums. How does the Valley Foundation fit into that? How would you describe the role it plays as compared to other resources that are out there?
Well, it does things, we try to do things which other organizations do not do. And like these visiting professorships, I don't think I know of any other agency who does that. We also have these Young Investigators Award. We have, and I have spent the last 30 years of my life doing this to create frameworks or conditions so that junior scientists can be independent and not stuck in a hierarchical structure. And even though Galileo wrote his masterpiece on the two stellar systems when he was 68, there's no doubt that people who are young don't respect dogma and just can think out of the box. And that's what he liked as well. I mean, he came, he thought about certain things like angiogenesis completely different from other people. And sometimes he was right, sometimes he was wrong, but that's okay. And therefore, we are focusing also on junior scientists, not on graduate students or so on, but on those who are mature enough to become independent. And that he would have liked too, I think.
So the foundation is doing some important work in this mission.
Yeah, the traditional organizations are very bureaucratic and have a hard time. I mean, if you know, one has to know, for example, the National Institute of Health, in a sense, an admired institution here with $32 billion plus per year. But the average year of people getting their first grant is 43 or 44. You know, in this, with 43 and 44, other people are CEOs of huge companies. And then they are just dependent like any servant from their hierarchical structures. That's not good. I mean, professors are like prima donnas. Many of them are. And so there's nobody who can with whom they could share their power or their interests. And that's the system. Therefore, it's important to create ways of junior scientists to find their space in through all these prima donnas and their ways through all this. And that's what we try. That's what I personally tried in the European Research Council and other surroundings. But that's what we try here as well. And everybody loves that. I think he would have liked it. But of course, I have a conflict because I like it too. And his wife, Cookie, she taught girls in colleges and so on in the sciences. So she was very enthusiastic as well about new developments. And they must have talked a lot about science, and she must have passed this on to her students. Well, she was maybe not that exuberant as he could be, but he also, I think she had a lot of influence on him too. I would think so. Otherwise, he may not have been able to survive in the university system, because somewhere in the system you have to cooperate, you know, sometimes you have to be a diplomat. But he was also very nice to her. He protected her as much as he could. And so in that sense, they happily lived together, would each give the other what they didn't have. And so I think it was a good, I don't know how long they were married, but must have been ages, decades.
They complemented each other. She smoothed out his rougher edges. And as the last question, how big a part then did Burt Valley and then the foundation, how big a part has it played in your life?
In my life, yes, quite a big part, because I could, on one hand, participate in these events, even before I took up my own visiting professorship. I did participate in several of these meetings. He had a house in somewhere in the south of Maine, someplace, forget, or the north of Massachusetts, I forget the name of the place. And again, he knew the best places to eat lobster, and of course he knew. But it was not just a waste of time, in a sense. It was just not for eating lobster. It was for trying to answer, to discuss particular issues, and sit there for hours and see where things were going. And then, of course, I learned about international, how important it is to have international relations. I think that maybe was the most important thing. That, I mean, I have done postdocs in Berkeley and in Stockholm, and it was clear that I appreciated international relations. Last night I met Arnie Levine, who is a visiting professor who had met me in Stockholm as a postdoc. So he knows me since 40 years, and we met here after some time last night and had red wine together. I mean, I didn't have a lack of international relations, but here with Bert, you could see the result of this, how very important it was for the advancement of science that people would get together and express their opinion openly and with no restraint and yet polite. And he gave opportunities for that, lots of opportunities.